Sergeant and Mrs. Smith, you're going to love this house.
Is that a tub in the kitchen?
There's no field manual for finding the right home. But when you do, USAA Homeowners Insurance can help protect it the right way. Restrictions apply.
Hi, I'm going to whisper some things to you now about Crunch chocolate bars. Because apparently this whispering thing is a thing that makes you feel things. It's saying something crunchy is coming in the candy wrapper language. Imagine your tongue hiking up those crispy, rocky ridges. Now, drum roll, please.
Wow, that's good. Crunchy, munchy chocolate doesn't whisper.
Turn up the fun with Crunch.
Hello and welcome to Series 4 of the Behind the Scenes podcast, Soap from the Box. I'm Lee Salisbury, TV director and producer, and now podcaster. And we are back bigger and better. Not only talking to actors who play your favourite characters in EastEnders, Coronation Street, Emmerdale, Hollyoaks, Home and Away and Neighbours, which is also coming back to our screens, but also extra special Pop from the Box music guests and some huge TV and film specials, just like our first episode last week, which you can listen to with the creator and cast of number one Netflix smash, Kaleidoscope. And don't just listen anywhere. To be VIP, you need to listen on the Another Slice podcast player. It's free to sign up to, and you'll get to hear exclusive audio and video clips you won't get anywhere else. And all the latest news from us directly into your inbox. Currently, there's an episode with EastEnders, I'm a Celebrity, and social media megastar Jacqueline Josser. It's free to listen to. Just head to anotherslice.com/soapfromthebox and sign up with us. You can also choose to subscribe. For a couple of quid, you get even more special content, including the chance to ask your questions to the stars and get exclusive special episodes that will be for your ears only. You'll also be able to hear episodes before anyone else. Head to anotherslice.com/soapfromthebox. Right, let's get going. It was my birthday this week, so I thought we would go proper retro on Soap from the Box. Summer Bay, here we come. My guest today was a huge part of my life from the age of 12 to the age of 20, hugely defining years of a person's life. It was not her first television role and definitely not her last. In fact, she won a Logie Award for Most Outstanding Supporting Actress in 2017 for playing Rose in Please Like Me. She has taken the stage by storm as well, appearing in Harry Potter and the Cursed Child. But to me, she will always be, well, I suppose, my TV mum who saw me through the highs and lows of being a teenager. It makes my year to welcome Pippa Fletcher, stroke Ross herself from Home and Away, Deborah Lawrence. Hi, Deborah.
Hello.
I mean, do you have lots of people saying that to you? Because I say that not lightly. You know, I mean, you were there for basically the major years of my life.
Yeah, no, it happens all the time. And people, there's a little routine that people do. They say that, first of all, they say, oh, were you my primary school teacher? And I say, no. And then they would then spend quite a long time when I wanted to get back to the car with my shopping. And so just to head them off at the pass, I'd say, oh, I was Pippa on Home and Away. That way I can very quickly get back to my car because I only yes. have to ask a couple of questions after that.
I know, it's weird. It's one of those roles that I don't think we've ever had a role quite like that in English soaps, actually, that I suppose because the whole show when it started was based around this one family, really. I suppose that's why she became such a mum in people's eyes.
Yeah. And I think, well, because I was the third actress to play her.
Yes.
Because when they did the pilot, it was Carol Willacy, but then she decided that she couldn't be on the set after 3 p.m. in the afternoon because she had to pick her kids up.
Yeah, which really doesn't work for soap, as we know. Yeah,
no. And then Vanessa did it and she paid off her house. So, and we didn't know it was going to go for 100 years. And so then, because I did originally audition for it in 1987
when I was for this
casting.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I did, but did went lucked out. That was fine. And then got the role in 1990. And, you know, the sort of literally Friday night Vanessa left and Monday night I was on and everybody in every single scene called me Pippa. So that
this
the
is,
audience
oh, I'm so,
got...
I'm so glad you said that. It's my story I recounted to so many people on this podcast going Australian States here, because I remember, I think the first scene was you hanging up washing and about four people shouted Pippa, and you were going, why are they calling this woman Pippa?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So, and then in the press, the British press particularly, I was the new Pippa for about a year. and then Vanessa became the old Pippa. So, that's how it works.
How does it? I mean, obviously, it's hilarious that, you know, Australian soap just do that quite matter of factly, just replace you in one episode, not even sending Vanessa away. But I mean, how was it taking over someone's role? Because it's a kind of a strange thing. Did you kind of stay away from watching Vanessa in it, or did you kind of watch the show to get a sense of kind of, because I suppose every show's got a different way of how the acting is, you know, how, where the acting lies. So how did you play it going in?
Yeah, well, because back, I'm ashamed to say this now. Oh, well, I'm sort of over it. I am over it now, to feeling guilty. But I went through the tortures of the damned even when I got down to the last two, of thinking, wondering if I even wanted to, you know, I'm a trained actor. I went to drama school, darling. And so I asked lots of friends about whether or not I should do it. They said, oh, yeah, do it. And then I sort of, in a very paranoid way, thought, oh, they want to tuck me away in TV, so I'm not competition for them for theatre roles. Once I'd been given the role, I then started watching Vanessa's work, because I wanted to see the style of shooting, because I've done lots of TV. In fact, the bulk of my career really has been in like miniseries and episodic television, but never a long running role.
Yeah,
I mean, I did Prisoner for I think I was on it for 6 months when I played Daphne Graham. So I knew what the requirements were there, but I also knew that. But that was only an hour a week. Home and Away and Neighbours are 2.5 hours of on-screen time. And so that means you have to shoot really, really quickly. So I just wanted to see just the because I work quite technically as an actor anyway. You know, I like to know what the camera shots are and the lenses and all that sort of stuff. And so I just wanted to, even though I had a lot of experience in TV, I just wanted to see the style of acting that they required. So I did watch about, I don't know, 50 episodes or something.
Oh, wow,
And also so that I knew who the actors that I was going to be meeting and who they all were, you know, so that was how I prepared.
And, I mean, I suppose another way, so did you purposefully kind of look at Vanessa's Pippa and think, did you try to replicate it, or did you just think, I'm going to go in with a clean sheet with Pippa? Because, again, it's quite hard, isn't it? Because you are actually going in as a character that's established.
Yeah, no, I just went in as a warm-hearted. I mean, they did ask me, you know, they spent a nanosecond asking me if I'd dye my hair blonde, and I said no. I think it's like anything. I mean, I've just finished playing Professor McGonagall in Harry Potter and the Cursed Child for the last couple of years. And so I wasn't going to emulate Maggie Smith.
No, exactly.
Because Professor McGonagall is a character, this really beautiful, rich character in her own right. And the same with, I mean, anybody who plays Juliet or Lady Macbeth.
Exactly.
You know, I mean, they're well-known roles. You just take them on. I mean, she was much beloved. So the scripts give it to you, the storylines give it to you. She's really this warm-hearted, kindly woman who loved her foster kids. And so you play that, and then after a while
people forget that the original one existed.
Yeah, they do.
It's
because it's
very fickle.
It's the storylines that are really important. And all of soap is written to a very careful formula where you've got little baby cliffhangers before the commercial break and then a baby cliffhanger at the end of, you know, Tuesday night show. And then at the end of the week, there's a bigger cliffhanger. At the end of the season, there's a whacking great cliffhanger to get people to come back after the holidays.
And you saying that actually, Deborah, again, for people at home listening, makes you understand how hard writing soap is to get that many. You know, you see a film and you have a couple of twists and turns, but actually soap is full of twists and turns and cliffhangers all the time.
Yeah, exactly right. And also most of the dialogue is reiterating stuff for people who might have missed a week.
Yes. Yeah.
You know, you'll be looking as you'll be, you know, buttering toast at the kitchen table saying, oh, look, you know, Sophie's baby was always going to come late. And I'm just so, you know, and, I mean, and that's the skill. So no one, and that's what, I think that's what annoys me when soap actors are sort of considered a bit further down the food chain, because the skill that's required to make that those programs for the majority of the viewing public who are actually at home watching television, right? They're the people we're entertaining. We've got to remember that. And it's a real skill, you know, but if you do a bit of theatre that maybe, you know, 1,000 people or 2,000 people are going to see in a season, like 4 weeks of play or whatever, or, you know, lots of people in the case of Harry Potter. But there's many, many, many millions of other people who'll never get to the theatre and don't go and see movies very often.
Yeah, very true.
And they're the people we're entertaining. So, and it's the soap actors and the directors and the writers are performing, I think, a community service. And also they're really, really bloody good at it.
Yeah, no, I mean, I was shocked when I joined as a director how fast the pace was, how, I mean, I suppose I went in dreamlike thinking everything was filmed in order. I was shocked everything was out of order and shocked that there were kind of four units over here working against each other. So the actors were kind of swapping four directors in the 2 week block and going from kind of day one to day 20 of the story. And I mean,
My God.
Yeah.
Oh, so, no, we only ever swapped two directors, like location and studio.
Oh, no, yeah, we had four blocks running. On Hollyoaks, actually, six blocks, and you could be filming literally 2 metres away from the other unit. It was crazy.
Oh, wow. Wow, yeah. Chookers, and, I mean, a huge admiration for that.
For everyone, yeah. And when you joined as well, I mean, do you remember your first day? Because obviously, again, I suppose you joined as Pippa this, you had lots of the kids were still there, including obviously brilliant Kate, Richie, who played Sally. Was everyone, obviously, I'm guessing everyone was so welcoming to you.
Well, the weird thing was that my first day was out on location where they were filming Carly's wedding. But I had to go out in costume to be in the wedding photographs that were then going to be put up in the Fletcher house.
Right, okay.
Right. So I had to go out on location where Vanessa was filming the scenes of being in the wedding. But for the still, which is fine because Vanessa and I are friends, and she's a wonderful theatre actress, and so you know it was lovely to see her, so I was there to be in costume and makeup to be photographed by the stills photographer for all of the photographs that were going to be in albums and on the set. So I met in fact, it was actually quite a good way to start.
Yeah,
because I think if I'd then gone straight into if I'd gone straight into the studio without Vanessa being there, then it might have been a little strange. But this way, everybody
like a handover of the baton.
Yeah, well, and poor Kate Ritchie, because she was only a Litley then, and she really was a very attached to Vanessa. So it was good that she on that day she had Vanessa and I together, so she could sort of she could see her two mums together, and then you know it. Pretty soon after I started, Kate and I commenced what is still a very, very close and precious friendship with each other.
Oh, so, brilliant. I know you can't actually get into a child's head probably as a child actor, kind of going through that. I suppose it is actually, it's a weird real life meets, you know, the fake life, isn't it?
Yeah, well, because she's a very intuitive actress too, Kate. And so, she just, you know, the status quo was changing for her because they were the family. They were the original family. So the central figure of that and, you know, the character of Tom, Roger, played by Roger Oakley, he'd been killed off in a car accident. Yes. So she was basically losing both her parents.
Oh, no. So, God,
terrific. but we, you know, she's very happy. You know, once we started to get on and she was fine and we really enjoyed our scenes together. So,
oh, that's brilliant. Yeah. And you say it was Carly's wedding. Do you remember at all that some of the cast, including who played Carly? It was
Sharon Hodge.
Sharon, do you remember some of them coming over to the UK because they did a Home and Away musical?
Oh, yeah, no, I do remember that.
Yes, I actually auditioned which was hilarious.
Yeah, yeah. No, and I can't, Sharon went and I think, was it Alex Papps went as well?
Yes,
or?
He went, yeah. And Julian McMahon, I think, as well. I think Julian McMahon.
Oh, my God,
well.
Yeah, that'd be right. He's now a huge, He's a huge star in America with Nip Tuck. He does, and also another FBI sort of program that he's actually really good in.
Yeah, well, fewer people have made it because obviously Melissa George made it really big as well, and you were quite you had a central storyline with her, and obviously the late and great Dieter, which I only bring up because I mean it's a hard world now for younger people, I think, in this business, isn't it? And then I've spoken to a lot of people on this podcast who have left a soap at a certain age and then really struggle because suddenly you have this fame and this, and then it's suddenly just not even if you're wanting the fame, suddenly everything goes and it's almost as though no one's there for you.
Yeah. Well, Dieter had worked quite a lot after Home and Away, like producers and directors were still using him. But there was big gaps in between jobs. And I think, you know, I guess if you don't have theatre to fall back on, then you can have really big, long gaps. And there's, you know, as you know, there's lots of actors who do other jobs in between times. And he did all sorts of things, window washing and all sorts of, like they all do.
Which we champion on this show because so many, the press over here are quite really bad actually at going, oh, former EastEnders star, now a builder, which is wrong with that? Builders are great people and do a great job.
Exactly right. And it's just, you know, and I think as my husband always says, you know, it's not how you are when you're in work. It's how you are when you're out of work, you know, you're resting between jobs.
Yes. Yeah.
And I think if you've got, you know, if you're financially able, you can paint or, you know, hike or, you know, whatever, have a hobby, or you do another sort of work, which is really good for the soul. And I don't think people should look down at that at all. It literally isn't enough work for all the actors in the world. So
no, there isn't. It's a hard profession. And how do you feel about being, you know, an older actress rather than one of the newbies coming in with kind of things like social media and stuff? I mean, I feel the pressure is so much bigger on younger actors now because there's so many people there at the, you know, the tap of a key to kind of give them a review.
It's terrifying. It's absolutely terrifying that, I mean, our daughter is 28. And my Instagram is open to everybody, but it's not, I don't do it for, to get more followers, or I just do it because we live in a beautiful part of the world and sometimes the flowers look really good.
Yes,
I'm at the moment I'm walking 4 kilometres a day to raise money for Ovarian Cancer Australia.
I saw that, which is brilliant. Well done, amazing.
So and I won. I worked with beautiful Marco Pierre White 4 years ago on Hell's Kitchen for the same charity, and I won that. And Gazby, is it Gazby? Beetle, what's his name? Gaz
from Geordie Shore.
Yeah, he came second.
Oh, did he? Was he on it with you? That's brilliant.
He was amazing. What an amazing! And he learnt to cook during that process. And
that's amazing.
He was so delighted with himself. I can't begin to tell you. But he was the runner up. So.
Fantastic.
Yeah, it was great. And he's a lovely fellow, so that was good. So I use social media for those sorts of reasons, or just to, you know, stay in touch with friends, and I comment on other, and I don't follow that many other people. But there are, my daughter tells me there's a way, she said, Mom, you could be a brand. And it's like,
oh, I know. I
don't want to be a brand.
No, this series of the podcast, we've had Paddy O'Connor, who's now one of the big stars in Home and Away, and a couple of the other lads. And I mean, it is, the pressure is on them, body image and everything now, because, you know, social media is kind of part and parcel of that age of being an actor now, that you kind of need that to get jobs in some aspects, which is mad.
Or not, do you know, like they might do all of this and be as gorgeous, but if you're not a good actor and you can't do your craft, and look, they're great, don't get me wrong, but we had some really interesting people come through, like Isla Fisher is now a huge star.
Amazing. Yeah, she was one of my favourite characters. Yeah.
And she was always, and so she was in our house, and we mentored Melissa as well, but because they were the ones who asked the older actors questions, you know, like,
yes,
but there were the others who were just interested in being seen at the clubs or being photographed for TV Week or TV Times or whatever, but then the ones who have made it are the ones who sat round with the because we had Heath Ledger for 6 weeks.
I know, how amazing his, as well.
Yeah, his first job. And he'd often spend the lunchtime just chatting to me in the green room because he wanted to know everything about, well, should he go to drama school? And I just said no. He already had a gorgeous voice. And then he did a series in Queensland. And then brilliantly, Mel Gibson picked him up because I was at drama school with Mel. He's the most divine human being. And
you're going through all my later questions. We'll come back to that, definitely.
So anyway, Heath was another one who asked the older cast the question. So
yeah, it's the same as being a director, actually. I always say I can tell the people that will make it as they're on work experience or runners because they're really interested in the craft rather than wanting to take the next step up or be at the, you know, when are we going to the glamorous bits? And you're like, well, that's not what TV is, actually. If you want to be in TV, and that's why I say to younger actors when I teach, you know, you really need to be committed and have a passion for this, because it's the craft, it's not what the craft brings, because the fame is a different thing, which you shouldn't want ever.
Yeah, but I think that's a later thing too, because you know, during the 90s, because as I said, we didn't know that Home and Away was going to go forever. And then, you know, I left after all our real estate was paid off, and I wanted to try and have another baby, and my mum was in the last years of her life down in Melbourne, so I wanted to come home. So I left then. But during the 90s, nobody had really made it big. Cate Blanchett and Geoffrey Rush, all those film actors had made it, Mel and Judy and stuff. But the TV kids hadn't really made it yet. And then as soon as Isla hit and Melissa and Ryan Quanten went over there for a while, and we had and Kylie Minogue got stratospherically huge, and Jason was huge as well. So I think that there's a joke. Somebody said there's a joke in LA that there are two drama schools in Australia: NIDA, which is the equivalent of your RADA, and Home and Away. So, you know, because they just were funneled. You know, there were agencies with branches in LA to funnel the kids through into the LA market.
And also, back then, I mean, the Home and Away and Neighbours were obviously huge over here, as were Outsiders, because there were a lot less programmes as well. So yeah, they kind of were in their glory days when you were in it, because so many people, especially in the UK. I mean, did you realise in the UK how big? I mean, I think the biggest episode of Neighbours was Scott and Charlene's wedding. It was watched by 19.6 million over here.
Oh, my God.
At 5:30 in the evening, which is incredible now. But did you kind of have that sense of how big it was in the UK as well when you were in?
We kept hearing, you know, 20 million people. And then plus the Europeans that were watching. We got fan mail from Estonia, you know, and Africa, like Nigeria and stuff. So there were lots of people watching. It's a bit like this, you know, we've got streaming services now, so everybody's watching everyone all the time.
But then it's quite unusual, actually.
Exactly. And, because Australia is beautiful and the beaches were fabulous. And I remember by the time that I arrived on Home and Away, they decided not to observe the seasons anymore. Suddenly I didn't have any sweaters or coats.
Oh, so it was a constant summer, was it?
It was just summer. So you'd often be freezing to death in a t-shirt and shorts down in July, which is our winter.
You're the first one to reveal that. And actually thinking of it, it is always summer in Neighbours and Home and Away.
Yeah, well, because I mean, in my wardrobe section of Pippa's clothes, there were all these beautiful cardigans. And when I first started, they were sort of patterned embroidered cardigans. They were really pretty. And then I got to wear them a couple of times. And then when I remember asking the wardrobe lady, maybe we could put this together with the cardigan. And she said, we're not wearing those anymore. Okay, then.
That's mad.
It's a bit like the gorgeous boys have to have their shirts off at least once a week, you know.
Oh my God. Well, it's the same here. The Emmerdale Village is the coldest place in the world when it's cold. And obviously we start filming somewhere when it's still winter. So there's a character who always wore short skirts and stuff, and we're in our North Face. It's horrendous. Yeah. Let's have a quick potted history, Pippa. So through whether they're quite easy questions, actually, but you joined in July 1990 and left in 1998. But as we said, made guest appearances until 2009. Easy questions. Yeah. After Tom's second heart attack, Pippa feels guilty months later. Why?
Oh, because she's met a new man.
Yes, who, of course, is Michael Ross, Dennis Cord, who is your real-life husband.
Yeah.
Who you met on the show, a true Kylie and Jason romance.
Yeah, absolutely. But we've been married for nearly 30 years now. So.
Oh, amazing. Congratulations. And was that strange? I suppose normally, you know, it's not often you fall in love with your co-star.
No, well, I mean, I had seen him the year before. Our film institute here play all the films for voting so that we can vote for best film and best actor and everything. And so I'd seen him on the screen in a film called Return Home, which is set in Adelaide. And I knew the other actors, but I didn't know who this guy was, because Dennis didn't go to drama school until he was 35. He'd been a technician with Telecom.
Oh, wow.
Working out in the desert. So he'd done that for 20 years. And then he went to VCA, Victorian College of the Arts. So it's such a small industry here, you know, everybody. And he was an absolute newcomer, and he was really good. And I remember thinking, oh, you're interesting. And then forgot about it. And then when they were auditioning for Michael, the new husband to be, there are all these actors that I'd worked with before, but there was just not a lot of chemistry. There was a moment where one of the actors who turned up had been really mean to me in my first television job. He didn't remember. Because it was years, like 13 years before that. I wouldn't have worked with him anyway. But I was quite happy when I said to the director, I said, oh, no, I don't think there's any chemistry there.
Shows you, everyone. I always say this. It always, always be nice to everyone as you go up in the industry. Yeah. So
we never forget and we never forgive. No. but then finally, the week before the Michael character was due to start, they sent me down to the casting place, and there was this guy in there. I didn't even look familiar. I just was attracted to him. I thought, he's interesting. So we did the really warm-hearted and kind and beautiful speaking voice. And so we did the scenes, and I just remember thinking, I didn't think romance. I wasn't thinking romance. I just thought, wow, I could work with this guy.
Yeah.
You know, the other actors had been in the business for a long time, so there's a certain style to their work, whereas Dennis was brand new to TV. He'd done a lot of theatre and the lead role in the film, but he was new to TV, so he was just playing really honestly, not for the camera. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, and so he's got that specific skill, I think, of being so honest in real life.
Exactly, because the camera picks up everything. So then halfway back up to the studio in the cab, I remembered it was the guy from Return Home. So I raced up to the producer's office and I said, you've got to book him because he's really clever. He was in this film. And Andrew, our producer, said, Deb, it's okay. The casting said the chemistry was so good between the two of you, we've signed him already.
Oh, amazing.
Which is great. And then I was really rude to him for 6 weeks because obviously I didn't realize at the time, it was only in retrospect, because obviously I fancied the pants off him.
But that's why.
So then we were together, got together, and then when we finally got married in secret 18 months after meeting, because we'd been over doing Panto in Leeds.
Oh, and, which is where I live.
Yeah. Oh, okay. It's a beautiful. I love it. We're staying at Headingley in
the big student district. Yeah, amazing.
Yeah. And so, because we're both absolute cricket tragic. So Headingley.
Okay. Heaven.
That's where he proposed. Well, he didn't say, will you marry me? He said, okay, let's have kids, which is what I wanted to hear, really. And then I remember we announced our wedding. We got married in complete secret because we didn't want to be bothered by anybody. And unfortunately, and I still regret this and I still apologise to her on occasion. We couldn't ask Kate because I didn't want to burden her with the secret, but she would have been the one that would have really delighted in having us, seeing us get married. But yeah, I didn't want to burden her with the secret. So, but then when we got married, Maddie Stevenson, one of the actors, I can't remember his character's name, but he said, "Oh, geez, I didn't know you guys were dating." I was like, he had no idea we'd been together for 18 months. So.
Right. Okay. And how was that on set? I mean, is it then strange playing a couple on set and being married in real life? I mean, say if you've had an argument at home or, you know, and going into work and then having to kind of act all day together.
Yeah, no, we tend to have, Dennis and I have little spats about unnecessary, tiny, stupid things.
Yeah, that's the same thing my husband.
But yeah, like, you know, major. Like... which way the kettle goes around so the steam doesn't burn you, you know? It's like, or, you know, please keep the fly screen shut because the mosquitoes are badged, you know? And so, you know, stuff like that. And we'll let off a bit of steam there. So because all of that stuff is very easily forgotten. And so we didn't ever arrive at set. And also we're professional too, of course.
Yes, exactly.
We were there to do a job. So once we were on the set, we were there as actors. So it wasn't a hard... It wasn't a hard line for us to maintain. It was quite easy. So
there's a new Paddy, and I can't remember his real life girlfriend in it, but they're currently in Home and Away together in real life and together in the show as well. So the tradition's being carried on. You obviously did a big story as well when the newborn Dale of Pippa died of sudden infant death syndrome, which actually I did. We did this story on Emmerdale, and I won't. If you listeners will be bored of me talking about it, but. It was what I found incredible was the reaction we had to it. The writer was very clever and played every character from a different angle. So hopefully at home you would relate to one of the characters. But I mean, we had some amazing letters from people. I mean, it really made me realise how important soap was, actually. It opened my eyes to the fact that we are more powerful. You go to a cinema and you see a film for 2 hours, but you sit at home, people sit at home and watch a soap 5 days a week. So when something happens to a character, it opens my eyes to how powerful it can be.
Well, they're totally invested. And we had exactly the same. And the backstory to that is that when I was about, you know, because we got pregnant and I offered to leave the show and they went, no. And I said, look, we'll have to have a scene where a doctor says this is a miracle, because the reason she was fostering was because she couldn't have kids anymore. It's fine. But I did have a couple of letters saying, Pippa, how did you get pregnant? Because I've been struggling for years, which was a bit sad. I felt very strongly about that. And unfortunately, the producer didn't put a scene in, which I would have liked. But when I was about 7 months pregnant, you know, a couple of months before I was leaving. We didn't time it like this. She's a honeymoon baby, but it just happened to coincide with the Christmas break. So I knew that we'd have time off over Christmas with her. And then I had 9 weeks off altogether. But the writers came to me when I was about 7 or 8 months pregnant, said, oh, look, we're going to do a cot death storyline because we can't keep the baby in. How do you feel about that? Because I was just focused on labour, because I'd been going to birthing classes and seeing a physiotherapist and all that sort of stuff, I just said, oh, yeah, that's fine. No worries, because the baby was still in my tummy at that stage.
Yeah.
And then, of course, we got back and pretty much one of the first scripts I picked up out of my pigeonhole was the cot death storyline. And we had Grace was with us at the studio because I was breastfeeding, and she was with her Mothercraft nurse nanny. And so she was in a room literally just off the studio.
Oh, wow.
And then we had Dennis and I had to play this scene, and the doll that they use is incredibly lifelike. And then we had two ambulance officers. And one, they're real. When they book them, they don't get actors to do it. They get the real guys to do it because they have to handle equipment and stuff. And so one of the guys had done a cot death probably, I think, about 2 weeks before. And so he'd already attended one, you know. So it was very, it was a tough, tough day. The crew were crying, you know. It was pretty tough. And I have to say, I didn't drink any alcohol for about a year before I conceived Grace. because I wanted
day,
to be really, but that, and I certainly wasn't drinking alcohol after she was born because I was breastfeeding, but I did go home and have a big glass of red wine that night.
Yeah, you're so right. We all had to go into Leeds because we had the biggest, that day we did. Our scene involved Charlotte Glaze Laura running down the stairs and find the baby. And we kind of had blocked it, but not really rehearsed. And we tried to get everything in one take, which we did. And it will live with me forever, the scene that she runs downstairs screaming. And there wasn't a dry eye in the house, the same with us. And then you could hear a pin drop. And we all had to go out and kind of, it was the hardest, most rewarding thing I've ever done. But it's, it's tough when you do stories like that, because actually, luckily Charlotte bizarrely had just had her newborn as well.
Oh no.
So how funny. And she actually, and our doll was, it was so heavy, and both the actors, I don't know whether you were the same, didn't want to hold it until the take. And then when they held it, kind of, they did fall apart. Yeah, it was, but just amazing how brilliant that. And it made me, I suppose, realise for the first time, actually, the power that we can have and how important it is that soap continues to do stories that affect people.
Because we got letters too. I got particularly lots of letters, but the two that remained with me was from a lady in Adelaide who is a grandmother, and her daughter hadn't been able to talk about the cot death that she had until they were both watching the episode of Home and Away, and then the girl who'd lost her baby was suddenly started to talk about things, and so the woman was writing to thank us. And then the other letter that stayed with me was from a mum who'd had a cot death, and she hadn't been able to explain it to her older kids. And so, because lots of people sit down with their dinner in front of the TV. And so she was able to, because they said to her, "Why are you crying, mummy?" And she was able to say, "Well, that's what happened to mummy." And as you said before, quite rightly, that's why we work as actors. And regardless of whether we're doing soap or, it's just that soap is 5 days a week, 5 nights a week. And so lots of people are watching, and it's the same with Harry Potter too. It tells a whole story that people, about dark and light and good and evil and triumph, and takes you on a journey. So that the role of the people in the arts, not just the actors, I mean, we're the front people out the front, but all the people who write and direct and light and do the sound and the costume, everybody involved is all involved in that's. We've had this terrible debacle over here where people in the arts during our really long lockdown last year, a whole lot of people got paid from the government, which was terrific. And if you're in an existing job, you got compensation from the government. But people in freelance arts work, like musicians and crew members and those people didn't qualify because they don't regard the arts as being very important here.
Well, we had exactly the same. Our theatres are already just kind of going back when every other event was open. So, it's quite astounding, the view of the arts, even though people watch the arts, all the politicians and everything watch the arts every day of their lives survive on it. It's quite crazy.
But as you said, what the politicians don't realise is that the people who watch soap opera also vote for politicians.
Exactly. Yes. No.
So you'd think that they would look after the arts a bit more.
Exactly.
Well,
we all love the arts. Next question is a storm which floods Summer Bay led. Both questions are related to the same. Well, a storm which floods Summer Bay led to which catastrophe?
Oh, Michael died.
I know. And so I asked that because was that obviously kind of a joint decision? You were married by this point. Was it quite hard seeing your man leave the show?
Well, they very kindly, because they storyboard 6 months in advance. And so they very kindly told us as soon as they knew that that was going to happen, they told us because we had, financial stuff in place. And so they told us that they were going to write the character out, which shocked us enormously at the time, because we couldn't understand why they would do it.
Yeah.
And the viewers weren't happy either.
It's quite weird, actually, because as we said, Tom had died, the original.
Yeah, that's right.
It's quite weird that they decided to do almost the same thing.
Yeah, exactly right. So, but in some ways, in retrospect, we were shocked, and Dennis was very shocked at the time. Well, we both were. And then somebody said to us that they needed his salary to pay three new teenagers, which was, I think that's a joke. But
I wouldn't count it. Yeah, good. You never know.
Well, no, yeah, it might have been real. So it might have been real. But
yeah.
But anyway, in the end, it was great because Grace, we'd had Grace with a nanny, and then we had to keep her at home after she turned two because she was too big to come to the channel. And then so she was about three or four, maybe 4 years of age then, or four, five. And so the beauty was that Dennis was then able to be home with her, and we didn't need a nanny anymore, which was, I mean, we loved our nannies, but it was great to have Daddy home. But also he then started doing all this theatre work in Sydney and back down in Melbourne. So, in fact, it was great for him. You know, he actually got to do to learn what soap opera
was.
Spread
his wings, yeah.
Yeah, and I was happy to stay to, you know, keep paying off the real estate. That was fine.
Yes.
And so because it was a, you know, an easy gig for me to do, and I settled in by that stage. And so, yeah, it was actually quite good for him because he got to do a whole lot of other things. So, yeah, it worked out.
Your decision to obviously leave to end the Home and Away era, I mean, again, it was a nice, I mean, soap, as I know from so many good friends who are in soap, it's one of the only places as an actor, say, you get to have maternity leave. You know, what the jobs do you get maternity leave as an actor? But was it your decision to leave? Did you finally think, right, it's time to kind of change?
Yeah. Because, as I said, my mum was well into her 80s living in Melbourne. She was still living independently. But I didn't want to get a phone call one day saying, oh, yeah, mum's died. Can you come down for the funeral?
Yeah.
So because we'd had a scare while I was still on the show where she did get quite gravely sick, and that was sort of like a wake-up call that she was quite, you know, getting more frail. And also I'd miscarried two babies I'm pretty pragmatic about miscarriages. I think if they're not supposed to be there, they're not supposed to come in, they're not supposed to come in. And so that got me thinking as well. So then once I'd made the decision to leave, I stayed for another year. So I gave them a year's notice, but also I stayed another year because by that stage the real estate was paid off, so it was good. And also just to consolidate finances, so I had, you know, I had some free time, so we didn't have to work. When we'd finished. So, but nearly every day I was on the phone to my agent saying, "Am I making the right choices?" That, you know, they were great, they were brilliant. And then eventually, and so they gave me a what's called a soft ending, because if you kill off a much loved character, apparently the audience rebel for a number of weeks.
I think they do, if not longer, I think. And also you kill off the chance of having a really loved character come back. Yeah,
exactly right. So I was given a new boyfriend played by a very dear friend of mine, Patrick, who's just gorgeous, Patrick Dixon. And he didn't have a very high TV profile at that stage, so it was good.
She didn't wait long, did she, Pippa?
sent her away around Australia. Exactly right. They sent her off around Australia, and then she just didn't come back until, you know, they got letters saying she was staying up in the Carrington Mountains. Or I think she's still there, and I think she's had another kid maybe, I don't know. But then I would come back probably nearly every 2 years for weddings or funerals.
What a lovely thing to do, really.
Yeah. And then the last time I was back was hilarious because the second last time they brought Sharon and myself and Adam Willits back.
Oh, wow.
To take Kate away to go to site, you know, Sally was going to go to Thailand on a holiday with the family. So they brought us all back for 3 weeks to have a big storyline about the original family coming to take Kate, to take Sally away. So that's how Kate left the series. And she was also not ever going to come back, but I mean, she did come back a bit later for a short time. And so that was the last time. So I said goodbye to everybody. But fine, no problem. And then in 2009, did you say, or 2008?
Yes, I think 2009 was your final one, yeah.
Yeah, well, it was shot at the end of 2008. And normally when I went back, I asked for my original salary plus business class and an apartment and a car, you know, just to remind them that I wasn't cheap. And normally they would be storylining, a couple of months, 3 or 4 months ahead, and they'd phone the agency and saying, is Deb available to come back for blah, blah, blah. But this time it was about 6 weeks out. And I thought, oh, somebody's stuffed up. And what had happened was Lynn McGranger had gone off to do Panto, and Ray Maher had gone off to do Panto. And there was this big and I can't remember the name of the character, but one of the characters in the beach house was in drug rehab.
Right.
Which left the beach house with nobody, no adults looking after the kids.
Oh, right.
So they rang and said that, well, perhaps maybe Pippa could come back. Could Pippa come back? So they rang, and so my agent put my price up by 20% because it was a panic, and so that was the last time I went back. But to tell you the truth, I didn't know anybody, and I just felt I did the storyline, and it was great. I was there for just a week, but I just thought, I didn't know any of the.
It doesn't feel the same anymore.
No, so I briefly worked with Chris Hemsworth, so at least I could say I've done that, but. But I didn't know any of the others, really. I mean, because Lynn and Ray were...
I suppose it's very strange going back. I know Emily Simons is now part of the furniture again, because she was... I worked with Emily over in Emmerdale, and then she had a sick mum, and that's why she went back. She went back to Australia, and she said it was weird at first. And I mean, and how do you feel about... Because Lynn McGranger's been on the show. I mean, it must be... and she can't believe that she's still there, because what, she's been there an extra 24 years or something after you...
It's astounding,
isn't it, that some people do... I mean, that's what soap needs, to be honest. Otherwise, they'll die off if we don't have these characters that stay. But
So they're valuable characters, so...
You probably couldn't ever see your life being another 24 years in Home and Away, though, from when you left.
No, I don't think so. No, because I'm 64 now, so that would make me 89 when I finish. I'm happy doing because I did Please Like Me, which was amazing. Have you seen it?
I haven't, but I'm going to watch that now. I'm going to watch that this week, because there's four seasons. Is it Netflix?
It's on Netflix.
Great. Yeah. I'm going to watch that. And you won, obviously, an award for that. Not that awards really are much.
Yeah. But not to boast, but I also won our Australian Academy Award for it too.
Yes, which is incredible.
For comedy. Yeah. So, but you'll see why.
I will promise to watch that. I've been looking for something to watch. So when I read, I was researching you, I was like, oh my God, this sounds totally brilliant.
Yeah.
Let's go back to the beginning of your career quickly, because you obviously studied, you studied at NIDA. Is it NIDA or NIDA? Yeah.
NIDA,
alongside Mel Gibson himself, alongside a load of other names as well. I mean, you said, it's the RADA of Australia. From a young age, I take it, you knew what you wanted to do.
Yeah, well, I was in school. Oh, I wanted to be a doctor. And then my older sister, who was at university, used to be in the university musicals. And one of the girls in the lead role in The Boyfriend got sick, so one of the chorus girls had to go and take over the role, and they were minus a chorus girl to sing and dance in the back row, not in the back row, it was only one of three. And so she dobbed me in and said, oh, Deborah sings and dances. So Mum let me have 2 weeks off school, and I went down and learnt the dance routines and the songs. And then literally, we did dress rehearsal, makeup, wigs, costumes, and then the opening night with the crowd in. And I literally fell in love with the smell of the grease paint and the roar of the crowd. Like,
oh,
there's
wow,
this moment where out under the lights with people out in front of me, I didn't think, oh, this is where I belong. I thought, wow, I can do this. It's like, and so then I started being in the school plays, and then I auditioned for NIDA. When I was 17, and it was in Sydney. I grew up in Melbourne, which is where we live now, and I got in. I didn't know that they only take 25 people out of about 3,000 applicants. If I'd known that, I might have been a bit more nervous. Did that for 3 years, and then came out into the industry. So. Yeah, it was a good start, I think.
A good start. And then you appeared in some Australian classics. It's kind of like when you go to the theatre here, you look at actors' CVs in the programme, and most people have done The Bill, Casualty, Holby City. I think this is probably the Australian version, which is The Sullivans, Skyways, Country Practice, lots of actors. That's been their training grounds, hasn't it, shows like that?
Yeah, exactly right. And also, I mean, when we trained, believe it or not, I graduated in 77, none of us were going to do film and none of us were going to do TV and nobody would even look at a commercial, for God's sake. We'd been trained for the theatre. But then, Judy Davis was in my year and her she did a bit of theatre and then she was very quickly hooked up with My Brilliant Career. So, and then the rest is history. She's an amazing actress. And then Mel and Steve Bisley were in Mad Max together. Steve was also in our year. He played the character of Goose in Mad Max. And of course they ended up doing a lot of theatre as well, but also then, and they just ended up doing a lot of screen work. And then, you know, Mel has had this stratospheric because he's so criminally handsome.
Yes.
And he's a really genuinely gorgeous human being. He's got the kindest heart, and it's that's why, you know, it's distressing to me to see all this crap fake news about him.
It always happens.
Awful, just awful. Because if people knew what he does for others behind the scenes, they would think differently.
And how is it? I always ask this question to various people when you've had, is part of it, I remember, you know, we've got a friend who's gone stratospheric, Jenna Coleman from when she was in Emmerdale.
Oh, yeah.
And part, you know, most of me is absolutely delighted. And then there is a tiny part that is very jealous. You know, it's quite weird. Yeah. It's, you know, there's just that little bit of you going, oh, yeah. I'm quite jealous, even though most of you is going, this is brilliant, isn't there? There's always
The thing that I've never actually felt that, not with colleagues, I felt it with other actresses who were cast because they were classically pretty.
Right.
Which I'm not classically pretty, but you know I understand what my look is, and what helped with that was that because Judy is. Very beautiful, beautiful bone structure and a gorgeous face. But there were things that she could do at drama school that I couldn't do, and also vice versa. There were things that I was good at that Judy couldn't do. So when she got cast in Brilliant Career, I didn't think, oh, bum, I should be doing that. I realised she was being cast because of all her cascading gorgeous hair, her beautiful face, and she just looked like the character she looked like from that period in history. So at no point did I feel regretful or jealous.
No,
because
yes.
So I learned that lesson, which I think is the first lesson I'd ever teach a young actor, you know.
It's one of the first lessons I teach them, actually. You need to excel at what you know you are good at, and don't try to be in competition with this other
that's
group
right.
of people where you're kind of bottom of the pile.
And
I think in real life, I always say it's good to judge where you are good-looking levels, because then you know what more work you've got to do to make up for it in our
exactly
world.
Exactly right. The other thing too is that I knew, you know, because I used to have to put on such careful makeup to turn up for all these screen tests where I knew back in those days, 70s, 80s, they were looking for a certain look, you know, very, and they're doing it now, you know, you have to be really beautiful to be on TV most of the time. What I love, I'd love to work in England because they use their older actresses properly. So I spent years and years putting on very careful makeup to look very beautiful, or my version of beautiful, and then you'd lose out on roles to actresses that, you know, perhaps were not trained, or, you know, were not very interesting or whatever. That, you know, they were passable but not shockingly good, you know. And I think always at the back of my mind I thought I'd be okay once I was in my 50s when the looks thing became less... It leveled the playing field, and that's when Please Like Me came. And people have, you know, the press have called it the renaissance of my career, which is probably has, I mean, I was working before that.
Yes, you know, no, you've done so much.
I was still working. I
cannot wait to see that. And actually, I think it's how the industry slightly changed as well, because of the TV thing, that so many big film stars then started doing TV. I mean, I can't remember what the first one was, but it's quite shocking. Now it's part of the parcel that everyone, everyone's doing TV, continuing drama series, which is great, I think, for moving that whole genre forward. The fact that,
because cinema has gone through a huge, and it wasn't just COVID, they were always, you know,
decline,
they make blockbusters so that people want to go into a cinema with a big digital surround sound. And there were art house films, but all you can see all that stuff on your big screen at home via Netflix or, the streaming services. So it makes sense. And, you know, during our long COVID here in Melbourne, I watched, you know, Spanish and you know, my French, what is it? My agent in Paris. What is it? Agent.
Yes, I know. What's it called?
Oh yeah, what's it called? Oh, I loved it because I miss Paris. I've got a very dear friend who lives there.
It's an amazing series. Have you watched Ozark?
No, I haven't seen that yet. That's on my list.
You must watch that. That's one of the best series I've ever seen. That's incredible.
Yeah, good.
And then to kind of end it, I'm definitely going to watch Please Like Me. We're going to start watching that this week. I'm so excited.
Please get back to me. I'd love to know your thoughts.
Oh, I will. We've just finished. We've kind of come to an end of everything. We've just finished Schitt's Creek, which was incredible.
Oh, divine.
Have you seen that?
Yeah. Yeah, just I want to be her when I grow up.
She is. I mean, if you've seen the behind the scenes, what I love even more is that she came up with the idea of the voice and the look.
Yeah.
And what a clever, brilliant, amazing actress.
Oh, just gorgeous.
I'm totally in love with her now.
Yeah. So the other thing too is it means that we older actresses are now being seen, you know, and then people want to watch us, which is great.
Yes. Well, I've had the brilliant Sue Johnson on the podcast, who over here is a national treasure. And she was saying about women in because she's recently done a series with Sean Bean, and she said this is how the world views men and women differently in this industry. The last time she worked with him, she was his lover, and now she's playing his mother.
Yeah, it's great, isn't it?
It is great, but she's kind of like, he gets away with that, but, you know, I've had to jump from being one to the other. Do you know what I mean? Women missing 20 years in women's life from the siren to the mum.
but also that means, like, I'm even past grandmother territory now. I'm sort of in, because they want you to look glamorous, you see. So, I mean, I'm about to start a TV series here on Amazon. But I'm playing somebody who's probably in their late 70s. But I did Driving Miss Daisy on stage, and she ages from 75 to 95. Wow. So I managed to pull that off on stage. So I'm sure I can pull old age off.
Well, most people put on their spotlight CV. I love when people can play from 17 to 45.
yeah, that's right. Well, I think I can play to 95, which is quite a good thing.
Yeah, that's great. And to end on, because you were in Prisoner as well, which I think I'm right in saying was where Neighbours is filmed. And I read at the very end of me researching that you actually did join Neighbours.
Yeah, well, they did. Yeah, it was this huge crossover thing because Jackie Woodburn, who plays Susan Kennedy,
she went for Pippa, didn't she?
Yeah, she did. And we had coffee afterwards when it was just we were shortlisted. And we genuinely, because we'd flattered together for years, and we genuinely said to each other, I don't mind if you get it, Dahl. We were happy, excuse me, we were happy for each other. And then I got it, and then she got Neighbours about a year later or 18 months later. And so it was to come in to play her sister, another actress. I'm making a habit of this. Another actress had played her sister 20 years earlier.
Right, okay.
But they phoned me, and she's such a lovely self-centered, narcissistic character, that it was a joy to do. And then I think they were setting it up to be sort of semi-regular. And then I got Harry Potter, which was a dream. Oh, it was a dream.
What a dream role. I've seen it in London. It's absolutely incredible.
Yeah, well, I saw it in London, and I immediately wanted to be in it. I didn't know they were going to do it in Australia. Because I still get recognized on the tube, you know, and you have to, although people are standing, if it's crowded and people are standing too close to you, there, are you Pippa from Home and Away?
Oh, do you? You still get recognized as Pippa?
Yeah, absolutely. Wow. Yeah. So, well, I don't know. I mean, I've now got grey hair, but I don't know. I still get recognised here too. I haven't been in London for a long time.
Oh, I'm sure
4 years.
You went in London. I mean, people never think soap stars in England.
Yeah, well, that's when I saw Harry Potter, I came out of the first half of the play reeling, thinking this is amazing.
And I thought, the phone to your agent, get me this role.
Yeah, well, yeah, exactly right. And well, I foolishly thought, I'm still famous here. People still know who I am. I'll ring the producers like an idiot. And of course, I didn't, because that was too silly. and then, of course, I ended up meeting them all, and they all, you know, I didn't expect them to know who I was, but of course, they do. You know, I forget. I forget that they know who Pippa from Home and Away is. They know who Deborah Lawrence is. So,
which is incredible. What a legacy to have left. And I love the fact people, I've had Alan Cumming, I've interviewed, who was in a soap over here, who always champions soap and says that once he did that, it set him up for life. So I think it's a great legacy to have been such a brilliant, pivotal character. And like I said, for us to people like me to have grown up with this TV family. I love that. It's something that never will be replicated.
No, that's why when people say, oh, you must get that all the time, you must hate it, I say, no, I don't, because, well, it paid off all the real estate, but also because it gave people joy. Or we had people saying that the only time they saw fresh vegetables is when Pip. That's why I always cut up. Nobody cuts vegetables up on Home and Away anymore. No one does.
That was Pippa's. That was your thing, wasn't it?
Yeah, because I wanted it to be real. So every scene I always was making dinner or making breakfast or organising food.
Exactly. Yeah, that household felt very real. That's what I remember. It felt like somewhere you wanted to be, because it was a bit crazy and a bit mad and real.
That's right. And now Alf lives there.
Ah, does Alf live there now? Wow.
Yeah, with Georgie Parker, who plays Rue.
And
she's very glamorous. There's no warm, gooey mum there anymore.
No, it's a shame.
Although, Irene's a sort of warm mum, but I mean, Pippa was a thing, I think.
Yes, Pippa was a thing. It's been amazing to have you on the podcast. It's such an honour to have you on. It's been joyful talking to you.
Yeah, well, thank you for inviting me. It's an honour. So, you know, I've got a fantasy about coming to work in England at some stage.
But, you must.
And well, then, Dennis is a British citizen, so I can work there, I think.
Oh, wow, you must come over. Like you said, there's some brilliant roles over here at the moment. And actually, glamour-wise, all for Kate Winslet as well in her Mayor of, what's it called?
Yeah.
Mayor of, because actually that's kind of changed the barriers slightly, I think. Here's a actress playing really groggy and looking like, you know, looking bad, and it's a huge role. Yeah. So I love that. But we would love hit you. What I love actually, Lynn McGranger's story, which goes down as one of my favourite stories, that she actually joined Home and Away for the sole purpose of wanting to do panto in Britain. And she knew if she joined Home and Away, she'd be able to.
Yeah, I heard that on the radio today because she's promoting a book. So, yeah, she said that.
I love amazing. That. How brilliant. So anyway, it's been lovely to talk to you, and we'll stay in touch. And I will promise I will watch your series. We're going to start tonight.
Yeah, good. Yeah,
thanks so much, Deborah.
A pleasure, absolute pleasure. The first couple of episodes are not shaky so much, but it might take you a little while to creep into it.
Always the best series, though. They're always the best series when it takes a couple to get into it.
Yeah, but stick with it, and I think you'll love it, because throughout the four seasons, it really, because the Americans picked up the first series, which is why we were able to produce the other three.
Well, everyone listening, go and watch that as well on Netflix right now. Yeah. Well, speak to you soon, Deborah. Thanks so much.
Yeah, thank you so much for inviting me. It's been a pleasure, and hello to everybody who's listening.
How amazing to have Deborah on Soap from the Box. That brought so many memories back listening to that. I really hope you enjoyed it. Remember, you can hear a special episode with EastEnders star Jacqueline Josser right now over at Another Slice. Sign up for free at the Another Slice podcast player. Get yourself over to anotherslice.com/soapfromthebox or download the app. It's easy. You can also subscribe for just a few quid and have access to so much more. I will be back same time, same place next week. Have a good one.